Welcome to the Prevention 365 podcast. This is your host, Carol Olvida, and prevention is every day and every way. Today, we have a guest, Elson Trinidad, who is a songwriter, a composer, musician from Los Angeles. He is an LA native. Hello, Elson.
Hi.
Okay, so first question, Elson. Shoot the first question. So, is there such a thing as community music? If so, how would you define it?
Well, I'm not really familiar with that term as community music. However, all forms of music begin within a community. And then organically grow into something bigger. I mean, just take, for example, just American music to begin with. I mean, it started with African Americans during slavery. You know, they sang work songs, they sang spirituals. They, you know, in New Orleans, they were given a chance once a week to play African music, and all that became jazz and became blues and it became rock and roll, it became hip hop. So, you know, all that started from within a community, but then it, you know, it eventually grew into something even bigger. Now, you know, now black music is American music, and that music is international now. I mean, you have, you know, people in France doing hip hop, you know, so it's, you know, I mean, the community is just a venue where it's like a little, a flower pot, but then eventually you have to plant it into the ground and it becomes a tree. That's how I describe it.
Yeah, what an analogy, Elson. Yeah, what an analogy. Now, being a singer, songwriter, a composer, how would you categorize, or how do you see the music that you produce?
Well, I do different kinds of music. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, I just listened to music in the radio. I grew up, I started, you know, liking, you know, enjoying music in the late 70s, early 80s. And that was a time when the synthesizers started emerging. So I got that. That's what got me into playing music. I'd see these bands playing keyboards and synthesizers on the music videos, and I was like, I want to do that. So I took piano lessons, and I also took some guitar lessons as well. So and then in school I played the saxophone. So because of that, and also because of other influences, because I got exposed to different kinds of instruments. So you had artists like Prince who played many instruments, so that was an inspiration to me too. And Stevie Wonder as well, you know, he plays several instruments. He's made albums, both Prince and Stevie Wonder made albums where it was just them doing all the music. So that was a definite inspiration. You know, so I've done a lot of different kinds of music. You know, when I was a young adult, I was in like a funk jazz band in the 90s, and we played around LA, and we actually ran into, we played in different clubs and festivals, and so we actually played the same venues as people like Black Eyed Peas or Ozu Motley. So we'd run into each other, you know, a lot. So I mean, I knew Black Eyed Peas would be famous, but not as famous as they did become. So that was kind of interesting. And then after that, I started in the 90s. I started getting into electronic music, and I did a project called E Trinity, which was played electronic dance music, and I mixed my whole take was kind of mixing electronic music with like indigenous Filipino music or Asian music, because, you know, you didn't really have people exposed to any form of most forms of like Asian music, East Asian, Southeast Asian music. So I did some of that. I sampled some like Philippine kulintang instruments, and I put them to electronic beats. So and I released a couple of albums in the released an album in 1999, in 2001 called Various Shades of Blue. And that actually got some sort of, not really, it didn't become a huge hit, but it was kind of known. I mean, it got great reviews. It got airplay like here on KCRW, and even got airplay in Philippines and Asia, and even in Europe too. So I released an album and it got played in three continents. So I'm kind of proud of that. And then in the early 2000s, I decided to go back to kind of my musical roots. You know, I mentioned Stevie Wonder and Prince like that. So 2004, I started a band called Elson and the Soul Barcada, and we performed around LA. We performed at the Lotus Festival and the Festival of Philippine Arts and Culture. We also played, you know, at other clubs and venues around town. In 2013, we got to play at the Grand Performances in downtown LA. So that was a wonderful experience. It's kind of just basically it's a group of my friends. It's not all Filipino, but most of the members are Filipino American. We also have it's different members as well. And it's really kind of a collection of my friends who play music and are talented. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when we get together, we perform live, and we play mainly like soul, R&B, funk. We've actually been working on an album for the past 17 years. So I know COVID put a halt to a lot of performances, but I was actually planning to release it in 2020, and you know that all that happened. But I was able in quarantine to finally mix everything down, get everything right, and so it's just a matter of releasing it. So hopefully I'll be doing that pretty soon. And, you know, later on I'll be sharing some songs from that album as well. So it's exclusive to your podcast.
Yeah, we're excited to hear it. Yeah. Okay, Elson, my next question is, does music always have a message?
It can. Well, you know what? Music, you know, when we talk about music with a message, a lot of it deals with lyrical content, and you know, it could be about politics or about, you know, social issues, or just, you know, so it can a lot of the times, you know, I mean, you know, that's the most obvious way to do it. But you could also convey a message instrumentally, or even just kind of through, even lyrically, but not directly. Because a lot of times when you write a song, you can write an obvious message and people will get that. But sometimes you could write, you could use like poetry or prose and have something kind of abstract. So when the listener hears it, they could interpret it one way. And if another listener would hear it, they would interpret it another way. And for the songwriter, that's perfectly fine, because that's probably the intent. But you also have certain kinds of music that, you know, you could even be instrumental, but the message that it conveys is more of emotion or a feeling or, just a sentiment. And, you know, well written and well arranged, you can convey a lot of messages or feelings without words. And, you know, for especially now, music is very international, that also helps, because you could have someone, you know, who speaks a totally different language than you still feel those same emotions without needing words. You know, you could make a song and someone who doesn't even speak your language could totally understand your music or the sentiment or the feeling that you're trying to convey. So I think that's really powerful to be able to do that in a song that's well composed and well arranged, and you know, doesn't always need lyrics. I mean, sometimes, you know, I write lyrics, but a lot of times I'll listen to a song and not really listen to the lyrics. I'll listen to the beat, I'll listen to the melody, the chord progression. And being a musician, I'll listen to the different instruments and how they're arranged. And I might sing along to the lyrics, but I won't even comprehend them unless I just sit down and like, okay, that's what that song is about. So sometimes I'll even know a song and not really understand what it, not really care what it's about. For me, lyrics are kind of like the icing on the cake, but the rest of the music, that's the cake. So
yes, and that's the message, right, Elson?
Well, like I said, it can be, but it doesn't always have to be. You could definitely convey a message through other means, but you know, lyrically, that's the easiest way to convey a message. But if you do a song well enough, then you could convey even more messages even without words.
Oh, that's a beautiful response. I mean, that's is what makes music universal, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
that's the universal character of music. Like, regardless of language, you know, regardless of nationality,
exactly, you know,
it's for the peoples of the world, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, in our earlier conversation, when we were discussing about this podcast, you mentioned something about your struggle with the creative process, you know. So can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I mean, I understand it happens to a lot of people. I mean, the typical one is writer's block. Like, you could write, you know, or create certain kinds of music, and then comes to a point where like, well, I can't really make music. I mean, it's sort of like a loaded kind of notion, because you could still make music anyway, but for the composer, it's, well, you know, I'm playing this, but it's not really good enough, so I don't care. So a lot of times I'll just not make anything, because I don't feel that, you know, what I could produce is good enough or better than what I did before. I guess that's the big challenge, is like, well, I've done music before, my next song should be even better, or at least just as good as what I did before. And, you know, to play or to make anything even, you know, a lower quality than you did before, doesn't seem like you're advancing as an artist. So I think that's, for a lot of artists, that's kind of the problem, the struggles that they face regarding like writer's block. And, you know, that happens to, you know, writers too, and filmmakers. So I guess, you know, it's a universal thing. The other thing is sort of more personal. It's, you know, nowadays, the great thing about music nowadays is that anyone could release music, and you could put it out there. The bad thing about music these days is that anyone could release music and anyone could put it out there. So there's a lot of music out there, and you just have to find it. And, you know, a lot of times, even, you know, a lot of quality artists, they put their stuff there and it just gets lost in the crowd. And for me, that's kind of insecurity, or, you know, I mean, as I mentioned, I'm releasing an album, and, you know, there's, when you do something like that, you invest a lot of time and money and resources into putting this out. Oh, you want everything to sound perfect. And okay, so you bring it out, and when you do, and, you know, some people will like it, and, you know, some people won't like it, and that's fine. I mean, that's for everything. But for me, the biggest fear is that, not that people won't like it, and, you know, music is art, and art is meant to create a reaction. So if people won't like my music and say they don't like my music, that's great. I mean, that's the reaction. That's they made a reaction, and that's perfectly fine. But my biggest fear is that people won't care, that people won't even bother to listen. That's, you know, so a lot of self-doubt, that's, I mean, that happens to a lot of people. But I mean, lately, you know, now I've become older, and it's like, well, is it worth putting all this time and energy into this when, you know, only 20 people are going to hear it, and, you know, no one else will really care. I mean, that's really what kind of haunts me a lot. It's like, is it worth it to do this? Cause like to go through all this trouble and no one, I mean, I'm not going to, I don't expect to, you know, have a platinum album or anything like that. I mean, I'm sure, you know, I'm planning to release my music independently, but you know, at least have a decent reaction and response to what I come out with. And you know, it's also challenging because nowadays, you know, you need to make a music video, or you know, like the younger generation, they do those TikTok videos and everything. And mm-hmm. you know, I'm not a cute little Gen Z person who could dance on TikTok and get like 20 million views. I mean, that's not gonna happen for me. So you know, what are, you know, I mean, I you know, I know that my music would more appeal to people my age or older, and that's fine. And maybe if a few young people will like it, but it's, you know, I don't expect them to be interested in it, but, yeah, so that's part of the struggle. I mean, self-doubt, I mean, it's, I wouldn't, you know, I know there's a term these days called, oh gosh, forgot. Hold on, I'm just blanking out. Oh, it's the tip of my tongue. Oh, okay, so I'm back. Okay, got it. I know that there's a term these days called imposter syndrome, where, you know, people might think, oh, they don't have the skills or talent, but I don't know. I think I do have skills and talents. It's just that I'm afraid that people won't even care. You know, there's a lot of things out. I mean, there's a lot of other things that could be worth their time. And, you know, even I might make the greatest song or greatest album that I can, and people won't even listen to it. You know, I mentioned about the internet. You know, I struggle with, I mean, it's like social media gives a lot of musicians a lot of opportunities to get their music heard, theoretically. But I mean, it's a challenge too, because, you know, this is my big problem is like, okay, this always happens. I'll put a Facebook post and say, yeah, I'm writing a new song. And then like 100 people will like it. It's like, oh, cool. You know, and people will comment. And then when I'm done with a song, I'll post it up. This is my new song. And then like 20 people will like it, but it'll only get like 5 listens. So I, you know, I don't know whether like that's the algorithms talking, but those kinds of things are kind of discouraging. It's like, well, you know, I did all this effort and it's free, but no one's even listening. So that's a big part of the struggles that I'm going through these days.
Yeah. Indifference, right? Art is supposed to be a reaction.
Yeah.
Whether it's positive, negative, it's okay.
Yeah.
But to be indifferent to your art, that's a tragedy, right?
Yeah. I'm more hurt by people just ignoring my music than people not liking it.
Yeah.
I would rather I'd rather have 1,000, like 10,000 people say your music sucks than 10,000 people ignoring my music.
No one listens.
Yeah, that hurts more.
Yeah, that's the tragedy. That's mm-hmm. the tragedy of the musician. Yeah, yeah. Elson, another question, okay, is, well, let's face it, the claim that drug really plays a big role in today's music world. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, I think
to that notion,
you know, today's music world, I don't think it's as prevalent as it was maybe like in the 80s or something like that. I mean, when I was in the 80s, I was still a teenager. So, you know, and I, you know, I'd hear a lot of artists, oh, you know, they did cocaine or whatever. And, you know, I was, even if I wanted to do cocaine, I couldn't, you know, it was still out of reach for me then. So, you know, just hearing a lot of artists, you know, like OD and have, you know, or have like, you know, I have to go into rehab and, you know, it was enough to just kind of like discourage me from, you know, even going anywhere near it. So I never started just because just the fear is like, well, if I did get into drugs, I'd probably be addicted and, you know, I'd either die or spend a lot of my time and energy trying to go into rehab. So it's better just not even to start. I have a lot of, you know, I have a lot of, I mean, music for me, it's enough to, you know, it's enough to, you know, I spend a lot of money buying instruments and things like that and computer software. So, you know, I don't think I'd have the budget if I were doing drugs. So, but, you know, I think these days there's some music scenes where, you know, some, you know, people will do like whatever ecstasy and things like that. But like, and you know, on certain genres, they'll just smoke pot or whatever. But like, compared to the way it was before, you know, I'd hear stories about, oh, there's like, you'd go in the recording studio and there's like lines of cocaine on the table. And I don't think that really happens anymore. So, I mean, you know, some, you know, I don't hear as much, stories for that, but, you know, even aside from recreational drugs, I mean, I think I mentioned Prince and Michael Jackson, who were, big influences on me, and both of them died from painkillers. Both of them died from, prescription drugs, and that's very tragic because they're not around anymore. And you know, the whole opioid epidemic, that's a big serious thing these days. So, I mean, beyond musicians, but I mean, those are two musicians who had their careers tragically cut short. So, I mean, I think that's very shameful and very tragic. So I'll try to live a pain-free life, and if I do experience pain, I'll try to find other ways of dealing with it. But that's a very pressing problem these days.
You said it. Yeah, that's very true, Elson. That's very true. So, Elson, to wrap up this podcast, being a singer, composer, a musician, can we hear samples of your music?
Oh, sure. Well, this is one song my band, Elson and the Soul Barcata, is our upcoming album called Brand New Thing, which is an ironic title because it's not brand new. But, you know, the music is, I realize the music is actually timeless. A lot of the music sounds like it comes from the 70s or 80s or 90s, but really it's kind of timeless. So, it might sound like it comes from a different era, but it could be appreciated in today's era as well. Mm-hmm. So this one song is actually, speaking of messages, this one song does have a message. It's actually about being Asian American or Filipino American. It's called Invisible, and it's about how how we've been lacking representation in society, and how we've been ignored, and how we've been treated as invisible. So the song is called Invisible.
Oh. the movies or on the TV screen. I am invisible. You know what I mean. My people never made the cover of People Magazine. I am invisible.
And this other song, also from Elson and the Soul Barcadas' brand new thing album coming out soon, hopefully. The song is called Hearts. It's a soul R&B kind of song. It's one of our favorite songs to play when we play live. So chances are if you've been to our show, you'll hear it. So this song is called Hearts.
An ocean, it's a lie. All I want was something that was right. Who I want is always out of sight.
So with this, we wrapped up our podcast on your music, Elson. Thank you, Elson, for being our guest on Prevention 365 podcast. So if people would like to reach out to you, how can they contact you?
Well, they could visit my website, elsongs.com. That's ELSONGS.com, like my name, elsonsongs.com. If you want to reach me on social media, I'm on Twitter at elsongs. I'm on Instagram at Elsongs Music, and you could also find me on YouTube. The channel is Elsongs as well, and I'm also on Facebook. I have a separate page for the Soul Barcada, so you could just search for Elson Soul Barcada and you can find the page.
There you have them. Elson Trinidad's songs, Invisible and Heart, obviously with a lot of message. Being Asian American, being Filipino American, you know. But one thing I would say, and this is my own take on his music. His is a music free of influence. So if we have something like under the influence of drugs, I would say, given the discussion that we had, his is a music free of influence, full of discipline, and packed with a lot of messages coming from the heart. With this, we bring to a close today's podcast on Prevention 365. Join us every Wednesday on the Believe Network, Spotify, and Apple, or on ADAP YouTube channel, that is AADAP, People Need People. Thank you and have a good day.